You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Disease Is Your Podcast. I'm your host, Carly Sisson, and in this episode, I spoke with Stephanie Bettliner about the differences between pioneer and generic animal drugs. We discussed the FDA CVM drug approval process, veterinary devices, pharmacy compounding, counterfeit drugs, and more. This episode of Disease Du Jour is brought to you by Bimeda. Stephanie Bettliner is currently serving as VP of Regulatory Affairs and R&D North America for Bimeda, a global animal health company that is passionate about providing solutions to optimize the health and well-being of animals. She has 30-plus years of experience in the animal drug industry, working with the FDA Center for Veterinary Medicine with a focus on chemistry, manufacturing and controls, and generic animal drugs. Stephanie is also chairperson of the Generic Animal Drug Alliance and Industry Trade Association. She holds a bachelor's degree in animal science from the University of Missouri-Columbia. Thank you, Stephanie, for joining us today.
Hi, Carly. I'm happy to be here.
I know that you know a lot about this subject in your current role. To get us started, for any veterinarians listening who maybe don't follow the regulatory terminology super closely, why is understanding drug approval categories so important in equine practice?
I think from my perspective, the different categories of animal health products that are available, it's really important as a practicing veterinarian to understand what might be behind those products in terms of being scientifically sound, being safe and efficacious. And so if we think about these types of products in different groups, we have full FDA-approved drugs, which would then include pioneer drugs and generic drugs. We can maybe get into that a little bit more in the coming few minutes. But aside from FDA-approved drugs, we also have several other categories of animal health products. And those might include animal devices or veterinary devices, which would be maybe under the oversight of FDA, but not strictly FDA approved. We also have a number of animal health supplements that you might think of like a joint supplement, like you or I might take a glucosamine or an MSM. And so there are a range of those types of product groupings. And then across that continuum, we also see pharmacy compounding of animal drugs, and we also have problems with counterfeit drugs.
Thank you for that overview, and we're going to get into all of that with a little bit more detail during this episode. So to start out, what defines a new animal drug application, and what does that process entail from a regulatory standpoint?
So a new animal drug application would be moving a drug product forward for FDA review and eventual approval. In order to do that, any drug sponsor would do a number of studies, both in life, in animals, and in the laboratories, and making sure we have a consistent chemistry and manufacturing process. So we would undertake after drug development, we would start with a dose determination. And what is the target problem that we're trying to solve? And we would do studies in this case, if we wanted to focus on horses, we would do target animal safety studies in horses, determining toxicity levels and making sure that the dose that we're prescribing is safe. There would be clinical and field efficacy trials to make sure that the product works as intended. We would do environmental assessments. What's the impact of this product once it gets out into the environment? And then also we would have strict controls on chemistry and manufacturing at the manufacturing sites to make sure that we can make the product in a reproducible way so that every batch is safe and efficacious. All of that information gets reviewed by FDA's Center for Veterinary Medicine. And it's quite an arduous process, but it also just then builds in a lot of credibility and safety to those products that are FDA approved.
And how long does that process usually take?
That's a great question. And it really varies. For a pioneer drug development, it can take anywhere from 5 to 10 years. And it really depends a bit on the complexity of the drug that we're working with, what problem we're trying to solve in the animal, and then are we able to manufacture it in a robust, repeatable way?
Okay. So that's the process that produces our name brand drugs that we're probably most familiar with. But then there's a different process for producing generic drugs, right? That's the abbreviated new animal drug application.
Yeah, so in animal health, much like in human health, we have generics. So similar to you might take Advil and someone else might take the store brand ibuprofen. And the same construct exists in animal health. And so as a generic animal drug sponsor, you would need to also apply to FDA for approval. And that approval process would prove to FDA that your product is bioequivalent to the pioneer. So it contains the same active ingredient. It works in the same way, at the same doses, in the same route of administration, and it has the same safety and efficacy profile as the pioneer product does. For some types of products, that comparison can be conducted in the laboratory. And in some products, it's necessary to conduct those assessments in animals in a bioequivalence trial. But all the same rules are in place for generics as for pioneer drug products in terms of how they're manufactured, the site manufacturing controls, FDA expectations of that manufacturing site, and data quality. So they're all governed, both pioneer and generic, under the same FDA rules. Once the generic is approved, then it can be marketed on its own merits. And there are some cases where a pioneer drug might exit the market or might be out of stock for drug shortage or supply chain concerns. And the generic product can continue to be sold and distributed to the customers, even in the absence of that pioneer drug. So you might find examples where both a pioneer and a generic drug are both offered for sale and for prescribing for your equine veterinarians, or you might find just one or the other. One contrast for veterinary health that is, it's pretty different from human health. In human drugs, just every possible product that can be made a generic does have a generic alternative. That is not necessarily the case in animal health. We have far fewer generic equivalents in the marketplace in contrast to human drugs.
Today's episode of the Disease Azure podcast is brought to you by Bimeda Equine. Bimeda might be the biggest animal health company you've never heard of until now. Bimeda's products have been trusted by veterinarians and owners since the 1960s, when their Irish roots began. Bimeda is one of the largest producers of dewormers like Equimax, Bimectin, and Exodus. World-renowned equine athletes also rely on Polyglycan, a patented formula that replaces lost or damaged synovial fluid, and Confidence EQ pheromone gel, which reduces and prevents equine stress. Consult your vet and visit bimedaus.com to see where to buy. Are there any misconceptions about generics in the equine space that you have encountered?
I think what we see at some points is that the marketplace, whether that be the veterinarian or the customer end user, they might confuse a generic for a pharmacy compounded product. And so they're quite different, but there are times when they get confused, I think, for the end users. So generic drugs, again, as we just talked, have gone through the full FDA review process and have been approved by FDA after them verifying that they're manufactured in a safe and effective way and that they're bioequivalent to the pioneer drug product. Pharmacy compounding products are not directly FDA regulated or reviewed, and so those don't have that scientific and documentation backup that you find in an FDA approved pioneer or generic animal drug. That's not to say that all pharmacy compounded products are bad, because there's definitely a place for those in serving animal health. But it's just a note of caution that those haven't undergone the same rigor and review by FDA that pioneer and generic approved animal drugs have been.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, I guess while we're on the topic of compounding, what are some of the situations where compounding would be appropriate, and when does it introduce regulatory or safety concerns for vets and horse owners?
Yeah, so pharmacy compounding is, again, a very legitimate way to serve some animal health needs in the absence of an approved animal drug. And so some examples might be that if a particular product is not available in an FDA-approved format, or if the FDA-approved format is not fit for purpose in terms of dosing this specific animal, this specific horse, then a pharmacy compounder might take an active ingredient or an approved animal drug and reconfigure it into a format that is more acceptable for the end user. With horses, I'm not as easily coming up with some really good examples, but cats are famous for not being able to be dosed with pills very well, or they're not very friendly to it a lot of times. And so you might find that pharmacy compounding is changing that dosage form into something more acceptable for cats. So there are definitely some instances where there aren't enough approved animal drugs to meet all of the animal health needs. And that's true in the equine space as well as other species. Where some of the concerns or considerations might come into play around using pharmacy compounded products would be just, you know, how much are you able to learn about the controls under which that medication was compounded? What are their quality controls, and how are they, you know, monitoring and keeping records about what they're giving you as the prescribing veterinarian to use on your client patients?
Right. So those would be some good things for veterinarians to look out for when they're making their compounding recommendations then?
Definitely.
Awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit now about veterinary devices. How does the FDA distinguish devices from drugs, and how do these regulatory pathways differ?
Great question. So veterinary devices are not formally registered or approved through FDA. FDA has some oversight in the event that a device was causing real harm. FDA does have the regulatory authority to react. But for a veterinary device to come forward and be offered for the public use, they do not need to get an FDA approval upfront. And if we think about the difference between a device and a drug, so a drug is taking an action and it's changing the structure or function of the body. And a device is more of a, not necessarily inanimate object, but I think of it more as like a bandage or a brace or an inhalation mask, not what goes through the mask, but the mask itself. And so the devices are more inanimate. We think of them as not impacting the structure or function of the body. So leg wraps and bandages and those types of things are veterinary devices.
Okay. Now, what is the FDA CVM approval process? Can you explain that to us and walk us through those steps a little bit?
Yeah, it's a pretty, as we've already discussed, it's a pretty long process. It can take multiple years. And often does take multiple years. The initiation of the process would be identification of the drug and of the problem you're trying to solve. What is the indication of your approved animal drug going to be? Is it an antibiotic? Is it an anthelmintic? Is it an anti-inflammatory? And so forth. And so the studies that are needed to prove what's the correct dose that needs to be given to the animal, at what frequency, if it's repeat doses are necessary. Is it a maintenance type drug where you're on the product for many months or even maybe across the life of a horse? Anthelmintics would be a great example where it's not just one dose, it's month after month as part of a deworming program. So all of those kind of the details around how often are you going to dose, what are you going to dose, and then what problem are you trying to solve, help to inform how to design the studies that are required to gain FDA approval. We would do a number of manufactured batches of the drug product. Those would go under really intense scrutiny from a chemistry, microbiology perspective. We would make sure that formulation is stable so that it can have a shelf life. Is it able to be on sale in the marketplace for 1 year or 2 years or 3 years? And at what storage conditions does it need to be maintained? Does it need to be refrigerated? Or does it need to be protected from freezing? And those things are all part of the drug development process. Once you've got a pretty good handle on that, then we're going to look at our target animal safety studies, our clinical and field efficacy trials. And those are often, multi-site trials where we try to get, especially depending on which indication we're pursuing, we try to get animals from different regions in the United States. We try to get animals that are in different husbandry conditions and just test the product and then also look for it to be efficacious, but also make sure that it's safe. And so we're keeping close track of any adverse events so that we can either try to mitigate that or embed labeling language that helps the veterinarian know how to prescribe it and then what to expect. Also, the product itself would go under an environmental assessment to see if there are any impacts there that are unforeseen. And then all of that information is going back and forth to FDA almost in real time. As a study is completed, it goes through FDA review. Maybe they have additional questions or they need you to do additional work. And so that all is a back and forth with FDA over the course of years in order to gain that product approval. We also have a really close focus on supply chain and where are our materials and individual components coming from? What is our container like? How is the dose delivered to the animal? And so forth. And so all of those pieces of the puzzle come together for FDA review.
So once a product is approved, does it remain approved indefinitely? And are there any follow-up trials, maybe once the product has been on the market for a while and has been used in a larger population of horses?
Yeah, that's another great question. There is definitely what we call in the regulatory space, life cycle management of all FDA approved products. And everything I'm about to describe is applicable both to pioneer products and generic products. So we do all drug sponsors monitor adverse event reports. So if a prescribing veterinarian witnesses an adverse event in their client patient, then there is a phone number or a contact information on the drug product packaging itself. Those reports come in to us as drug sponsors or can be filed directly with FDA. We do investigations on those, and then we also keep those records. We continue to monitor drug product from a chemistry, microbiology, and stability standpoint throughout the life of its time on the market. So we continue to collect that data batch after batch. And at a minimum, once per year, we accumulate all of the information that we have on our drug experience. We call it drug experience reporting. And then also we file any changes that have happened in our manufacturing process or in our laboratories. Additional animal studies post-approval are not required. However, it's possible to do so if, for example, you started with an approval for one pretty narrow indication, but you know now that it's out in the marketplace that it also is beneficial in a different way. You can take up your approved product and get it back into an approval process to add those additional efficacy claims. So that's an example where you might do post-marketing studies. Another might be as the product is more widely used, and if you are by any chance getting an unusual number of adverse events, or maybe an unusual type of adverse event in the client population, then FDA might ask you to take a closer look at, you know, really what's going on and make sure that we understand it. And so from time to time, FDA will instruct a revision of product labeling to either add additional warnings or additional precaution statements. Maybe we've figured out that this product shouldn't be used in concert with another product. And so the labeling may, throughout the product life cycle, be updated to encompass those additional findings and new knowledge as the product gets more experience.
Right. If you were going to seek FDA approval for a separate application for the same drug, would that still be the 5 to 10 year goal mark, I guess you would call it, or would that be a little bit more expedited?
It should be a bit faster. Because a lot of your initial data would still be there to support your additional work. And especially if you're staying in the same species, like let's say we're staying in horses, and we've been approved in horses at this dose, and now we know that this dose is also effective at another problem solving, then it probably is a bit faster than that 5 to 10 year mark. Okay. Now, if you're changing the dose or the route of administration in any way, then you're not entirely back to the beginning of the process, but there would be additional studies needed.
Right. So what is a counterfeit drug, and what risks do these drugs pose, both in terms of horse health and liability for veterinarians?
Yeah, so this is the one that concerns me probably the most in our current environment. And it's something that I am seeing a lot of concerning traffic on, especially with some of our equine portfolio. So counterfeit drugs are those that are posing to look like they are an FDA-approved drug. Perhaps a bad actor would pick up an approved FDA product and its packaging, and they would mirror that, and they would try to make it look like their product is the product that is FDA approved. And in some cases, it gets really hard to tell them apart. We have started to get complaints from the field where then they send us the packaging, and after a bit of review, we can determine it's not our product, but it's been made to look almost exactly like our product. And the caution there and the problem there is that we have no idea what is actually in the container, and we don't know if it's been tested. We don't know if it's safe. We don't know if it's efficacious. And so as a veterinarian, I would be very concerned about the problem of counterfeit drugs. It's really a tough thing to combat. And again, it's very hard to tell them apart.
Where are these drugs being sold? Like, where would you even run into them?
So from what I'm seeing currently, and again, this is just our own experience, but a lot of online retailers are maybe in their own procurement processes or offering for sale, they're not necessarily vetting where the product came from. And so we are finding counterfeit products are available for sale on online retailing, Amazon.com, Walmart.com, and some others, where if we find them, if we get alerted to them, we've been working with Amazon and working with Walmart and trying to help them learn how to tell the difference. Right. Between a counterfeit and a true FDA approved drug. But it is difficult, and the bad actors are getting more and more clever, which is definitely a problem. And it's very concerning. And I think especially with the focus on animal health, because we don't know what is in those products and we don't know what the outcome might be if they're used in the field.
Okay. Do you have any tips for veterinarians listening on some of the red flags that they should look for counterfeit drugs?
Yeah, I think definitely the more you can know about where the product really came from, the better. So In animal health, we have a really good supply chain. We have lots of veterinary distribution that is really well controlled. That gets a bit harder if you're relying on those online retailers. And I'm not saying that those are all bad, because certainly there are a lot of very legitimate products available for sale on Amazon and Walmart. I think upon receipt, if anything looks a little bit off, something's misspelled, the print on the carton is smudged, it doesn't have a lot number and expiry date, it doesn't have a, you know, like where it came from information. If any of that seems to be out of place, then I would definitely raise a question. Some of the reports we're getting on counterfeits, the counterfeiters are copying our packaging so closely that that's where the customer found our phone number, was it's on the carton. So that does get a bit tough, but there again, we were able to find either missing information, or something was misspelled, or the packaging was crushed and dirty and smudged. And so they really are trying to replicate approved products, but there are still some telltale signs maybe that would let the end user know it's not meant to be.
Yeah, I imagine that's really tricky when they're literally copying logos of different brands.
Yeah, it's definitely hard.
And
it's disappointing for the customer, I'm sure, like, you know, to feel like they bought something legitimate and then find out that it wasn't. So
yeah,
it's definitely a problem.
If you purchase a drug that you think might be counterfeit, what should your next step be in terms of reporting it?
So there may be contact information on the packaging itself. And again, if it's in some cases, they've copied the contact information of the legitimate drug sponsor, so they can help you. Also, FDA accepts complaints and questions from the field. Anyone, you or I, can get on FDA's website and report a product problem. I can't speak to how responsive they are in the current administration, but it is possible to report those findings directly to FDA. And then, you know, your suppliers, if you get a product from whoever as a supplier and it turns out to not be legitimate, you know, go back to them, because they're also learning. What we found on the products in these situations where we've had complaints of counterfeited product, the retailers that we're working with are really open to hearing it, and they're open to researching and learning. So you can always kind of swim upstream from where you purchased the product and try to figure it out that way as well.
Awesome. Well, before we wrap up today, do you have anything else that you would like to add on any of these drug classes, approval processes, or anything about Bimeda?
So I think just, you know, with a really big focus on animal health generally, there are a lot of really good products out there, and the FDA approval process should give the practicing veterinarians a lot of confidence in the approved products, that they will perform as intended, and that they would be, you know, safe and efficacious for their client patients. And there are still animal health products outside of the approved realm that are definitely valuable as part of the animal health equation and necessary, because the animal drug approvals don't meet all needs. But I would say once you're outside of FDA approved drugs, then just proceed with caution and do as much homework as you can. And again, lots of really good, valuable products there that approved products don't always fill those gaps, but those, yeah, maybe need a little more attention and a little more homework to make sure that you're doing the right thing by animal health.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for coming on this episode and explaining these processes in a little bit more detail.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to say thank you again to Stephanie for joining us, and thank you to Bimeda for supporting this episode. And as always, thank you to our listeners for tuning in to Disease Du Jour. If you have any questions or suggestions for the podcast, please send me an email at cassistant@equinenetwork.com.